Big Ten Plus 4 is a member of Odd Pods Media and ASAP All Sports All Plays Network.
How's it going? Good morning and welcome into Big Ten Plus 4, college sports with a Midwest perspective, blue collar and blue blood. I'm Dalton Shetler, Tony Hollingsworth there in the middle if you're joining us on a video medium, and then Sam Sprunger there at the end. Folks, we got another week down, another week to come in Big Ten football. How are we feeling right now? Let's do a self-gauge check because Tony's a Michigan State fan, Sam's a Purdue fan. Not a great weekend coming off for either of you.
Yeah, no, can we just talk about, I don't know about you two gents, but I'm really confused at this whole like AP 25 ranking, because Michigan State came into Washington ranked number 11. They lose and the top AP 25 poll is just like, Michigan State, you are no longer ranked. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. And then what we saw after week one, Florida was unranked, beat Utah number 7, and then Florida jumped up to number 12. I'm like, what is this ranking? So I'm so confused as to what this is. Like, just consistency. It's all I ask. I just ask for consistency.
I think they've changed to a reactionary poll rather than you have to work your way up. And I don't know that it's necessarily the worst thing. Just because, you know, those teams are ranked pretty high, so obviously there's some reasoning to it. And if somebody comes in and gives them a thumping, they should probably jump up there. Maybe, you know, it's wrong. So I think it's more of a reactionary poll anymore compared to, okay, we started unranked. We worked our way up from the low 20s all the way up to the top 10. It's, hey, we beat a number 7 team. We're going to be in the top 15 now.
Yeah.
And reactionary is the exact word I thought of too. And it's interesting though, because I think Sam is right, but part of it to me too, Michigan State, as you're talking about there, Tony, as the example, goes on the road to a Power 5 team. And because they lose by 11 points, and really I'm skewing my point in that way, because honestly, the game was worse than that, but Michigan State made it 11 by the time they finished, that they're bounced out. They're being punished for playing on the road against a Power 5 team. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a dangerous, like, precedent to set, dangerous standard to set. But ultimately, AP poll just doesn't matter anymore. I mean, we have the College Football Playoff Committee. So, like, besides being able to, in your game note, say how many times you beat a top 10 team or whatever, like, these things just don't matter anymore.
Can I also add that, excuse me, we talked about this game in depth last week, and the first thing you said, Dalton, after you gave us the two teams was Washington is favored by 3. Why? If they were unranked, why were they favored? So that tells you that the people making the odds knew a heck of a lot better than what the AP poll voters know. And that's not taking anything away or saying that Michigan State isn't going to be good or isn't good now. It's just they had this wrong.
Yeah.
And again, Michael Penix Jr., quarterback that Michigan State's seen a couple of times.
For sure.
In 3 meetings that Penix has had against Michigan State, he's completed about 68% of his passes, thrown for 1,000 and I think 3 yards in his 3 matchups against Michigan State. 9 touchdowns and 2 picks. So, like, Penix has had the number of the Spartans over his career, and they had a big one there. But it's funny, too, because you bring up the spread and the odds makers and kind of what last week was. I think the odds makers really don't know what to do with this weekend, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But as Minnesota goes to Michigan State to open up Big Ten play, Minnesota's favored by 2, and I think that's a little bit of the odds makers being like, I really don't know what to do with the information we've gathered so far. And we'll talk about that later on. But let's go ahead and talk about some of these games. And we can actually start off with the Seattle matchup. Michigan State and Washington. We talked a little bit about Michael Penix Jr. carving up Michigan State in this one. The Spartan secondary last year ranked dead last in the country when it came to pass defense, 130th. And folks, it didn't look too good this past weekend. 397 passing yards for Michael Penix Jr. I suppose the questions are, is it time to panic a little bit in East Lansing? Gauging social media, you know, that's such a wildfire after every single weekend.
That's a wise choice.
Or bad weekend.
Good place to check, you know.
Yeah, right, right. So is it time to panic? What stood out to you about Michigan State, especially as the team tries to bounce back and move forward?
Well, obviously, they didn't get the upfront pressure that was needed to help remedy the secondary from having to hold their job longer. Okay,
and just to interject with the stat, but Penix didn't get sacked a single time in that game. He hasn't been sacked yet this year. Continue.
Yeah, so that right there. I mean, you didn't mention hurries or any sort of knockdowns. You know, those are going to exist every game. But here's the thing: I can tell you they're probably not double digit, because that means you're getting good pressure and making him have to utilize his scrambling skills to either extend the play to where he can throw downfield or he can run. And so when your secondary has to hold the job longer and he's not being pressured, he can just pick it apart. And that would be my concern with Michigan State, is they have to have the upfront pressure or they're going to really struggle on defense.
And Tony, before you jump in, we're talking about a Michigan State team that after 2 weeks led the country in sacks. We saw in the first 2 weeks, a ton of pressure, but for whatever reason, they couldn't get home in this Washington game. There weren't many blitzes, so it was up to the front four like it had been the first 2 weeks. I mean, that's been kind of the philosophy, the scheme that Michigan State's been playing with. But to your point, they were unable to get home, and that kind of begs the question, is Washington's pass pro that good, or is Michigan State's front four maybe a little overhyped or inflated from what we saw in their first 2 weeks against Western and Akron? Tony, what stood out to you?
Yeah, I think it's just overall, if you look at the stats, I mean, kind of like what we talked about, you know, last week, Washington is a lot better than what people probably expect. Right. Because just looking at the statistics, and this is just purely in the Pac-12, out of the three games that they've played so far, Washington has, they've gotten 1,645 yards. They average about 548 yards a game just on offense. And then defense, they're even better, much like what Dalton mentioned about last year. In the three games they played, they've only allowed 836 yards. They average about 278 yards a game as far as being allowed. So, and that's second in the Pac-12 as far as defense goes, and they're number one in offense as far as the Pac-12 goes. And I mean, if you look at even compared to some of the Big Ten teams, now defensively, you know, they're about middle of the pack as far as the Big Ten goes. But offensively, they're right behind Ohio State and Minnesota. So they're right up there as far as overall talent. So this is a team that I think was a lot better than what they expected. I think for Michigan State, that may have come back to kind of bite them a little bit of, you know, maybe a little bit of some overconfidence. You know, like you said, Dalton, they led the nation in sacks. So it's like, okay, we're going to get to the quarterback. But, you know, usually by halftime, it's like, can you dig yourself back out of that hole? Mm-hmm. Maybe. But with as potent as that Washington offense is, that's a hard hill to try to, you know, climb up against and try to make sure you come out with the win. And especially with Michigan State's defense right now, you know, it is better than last year, but I mean, as far as the Big Ten goes, I think it's ranked right at 10. Let's see, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Sorry, they're ranked 9th in the Big Ten right now. So they're not looking good as far as the Big Ten goes in defensive standings.
And a big part of the message that's been talked about within the Michigan State walls this past week is the lack of complementary football. So the defense finally comes out and they get you a goal line stand early in this game. They get you a goal line stand. They stop Washington. The very next play, a safety in the end zone where your running back couldn't make it out, tripped over the calf of one of the offensive linemen who got pushed back into the end zone. Like, that's a bit of an issue. And then the safety punt goes out of bounds. So, like, it just was one thing after another kind of adding up against this team. But moving forward, I suppose, and look, everybody's got injuries, and this isn't meant to be an excuse. When you look on the defensive side, we talked about Xavier Henderson being out indefinitely after that first week, and that was going to hurt them. It's a fifth-year safety back there in that secondary, the leader of the secondary. Snow being out, Jacob Slade, the defensive tackle, and one of the best in the country, out for that game. Petrowski, defensive end, got hurt in that game and did not return. On the offensive side, you were without Jaden Reed, one of the best playmakers in the country. Like, the list goes on for the injuries Michigan State dealt with. And I do have to say, Michigan State offensively, not running the ball, but throwing the ball, was still impressive even without Jaden Reed. Keon Coleman dazzled. 9 catches, 116 yards, 2 touchdowns. Peyton Thorne started the game 10 for 10. Like, there's something to really believe and invest in with this Spartan passing attack.
And that shows you how one side of the ball can affect greatly how the outcome of the game goes, because the offense is producing. The offense is showing strength, you know, some very good, talent, and doing in-game good things, you know, not like, oh, hey, he's a hard worker. Like, in-game, making big plays at the appropriate time, you know, putting points on the board. Yeah. Your defense is a liability right now. I mean, yeah. I guess that's where I'm going to keep going, is because the offense is showing that it's going to be able to produce. It's just, it's on the defense to make sure that it puts the bow on top.
Yeah, fair enough. Let's move forward to one of the other games. How about in SEC country, Auburn heads down to Jordan O'Hare Stadium, and it's the first time anybody's ever been to Auburn from the Big Ten, and there's all this talk and hype about this game. This one was a channel switcher early. Penn State came out, dominated this game. Well, I see both of you nodding along. Sam seemed like he was ready to jump in there. What do you got about Penn State?
You said Auburn went down to SEC country. You meant Penn State.
Oh, did I? Penn State went down. Right. Thank you. Thank
I wasn't
you, thank
trying you. To be a jerk, so that's why I didn't just cut you off. But this, I guess, doesn't surprise me as much that Penn State won, but as to the dominance. Like, they put 41 on Auburn in Auburn. And I guess people that don't believe that Penn State is kind of better than where they were anticipating, at least at this point. Totally just lost my train of thought.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that happens. I'll switch gears over to Tony. Nicholas Singleton, Penn State has a running back. And it's really interesting because going into the year, we talked about, and this has been the case for many years, Penn State's offensive line, not quite to the level that you want it to be. But this rushing attack they have with Nicholas Singleton, this is the real deal. And the defense really showed out once again.
Yeah, I think that was probably the biggest thing that surprised me more than anything, because, you know, when we talked about it, I was like, oh, I had Auburn winning. I was like, okay, you know, even though they're not the greatest SEC team, they usually do fairly well against anybody outside of the SEC. And yeah, it just completely fell apart. And I think that's what surprised me the most out of anything, is that it wasn't even like really competitive. You know, like you guys said, Penn State came out and dominated. You know, Singleton had 124 yards, 2 touchdowns. Clifford went 14 of 19 for 178. And, you know, there was just nothing Auburn could do to match it. And it really kind of surprised me. It made me have a little bit more faith in Penn State. Like, I know the first couple weeks I was like, I don't really know. Like, that first game against Purdue, Penn State didn't really win. Purdue just lost. And it was like, okay, then Penn State turned around. Who did Penn State face after that? I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think Ohio, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was Ohio. So, I mean, okay. Like, I can kind of see them beating up on them. But it was like, you know, this was definitely, to me, a statement win of being the first team to go down to Auburn and play them and win in such a domineering fashion. This is a Penn State team that is going to send a message and is saying, hey, you know, we're still going to compete in the Big Ten East. Like, it may still be Ohio State and Michigan currently, but we're going to be right there in the conversation with them.
I remembered where I was. What happened was, as a producer, you have things that pop up or something that you have to pay attention to while you're trying to make a point. And so I apologize, but
you're good.
What I was saying was about Auburn is, if you don't want to say Penn State's good or that good, then you're saying Auburn is very below par. Then, if Penn State's decent but not great, going into Auburn, one a historically very hard place to play, Auburn's not that good this year, and maybe that's the accurate statement. But Purdue's better than better than the average team, and they beat Purdue. Now, granted, like Tony said, that it was a little bit of a struggle, and more of maybe Purdue lost it rather than, but that it, still a W, you know. Mm-hmm. So they were at least in position to do that. So I honestly think Penn State is better than what I anticipated. I think they're clearly number two in my East now.
Really?
Hmm.
So Ohio State, I'm assuming, is one.
Yes.
Penn State is two. Okay.
I still think Michigan, once they get tested, they're going to falter at some point. I don't wish it. I just think it still. I'm not sold on them because their lineup of opponents up to this point, I think Jamboree has been thrown around, you know? So, that's, I mean, it's I'm still not sold on them. So that could change. I'm a human poll here of one here, you know, trying to make sure and rank people here or teams here. And so right now, Penn State's my number two. Could they bump the Buckeyes? Sure. I'd give them a lot more of a chance now than I would have a month ago.
And it's crazy too, kind of to your point, Sam, with Michigan right now, they rank fourth in the Big Ten as far as yards per game. They rank number one in points. They've managed to be able to drop about 55 points a game on the likes of the almighty Colorado State, Hawaii, and UConn. Very, very tough, very tough group five schools that nobody has ever beaten ever. So, you know, Michigan has done well for what they've got, but, and, you know, this is kind of jumping a little bit, but Maryland's ranked number three in the Big Ten. So to me, it's one of those, I'm kind of with Sam. I don't fully trust Michigan yet because they haven't really had to play anybody. Oh, and they finally got their quarterback situation figured out. So it's like, okay, now what are you going to do when you actually have to face a difficult team to play instead of, you know, basically a bunch of upgraded high schools? Like, it.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting. I'm going to be honest and transparent here. I lost audio for a little bit of that, so I'm going to go back to one of the other things I heard Sam say, which was Purdue losing a game, and that was the Penn State. But hey, it reared its ugly head once again this past week, where Purdue drops to Syracuse, final 32-29. Our resident Purdue Pete faithful is Sam Sprunger over there. You watch the end of that game, and with 50 seconds left, Purdue scores a touchdown, takes the lead, but two unsportsmanlike conduct penalties seized the Boilermakers kickoff from their own 10-yard line, which set up the game-winning drive for the Cuse. Your thoughts?
I have never been so disappointed in a defense not learning from a previous game. They had penalties, stupid penalties, that entire game. They had stupid penalties against Penn State, and if you remember, that helped Penn State drive at the end and get in position to win back in the first week.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to go ahead and thump on Indiana State and then come back against a formidable opponent and still do the same stupid mistakes. Not saying it should have been perfect, but it shouldn't have been worse than it was against Penn State. It just shouldn't. The running game was actually pretty decent for Purdue. Purdue won this game in every aspect except for the score, period. And won Aiden O'Connell's stupid pick six. So I'm more angry just because I'm like, guys, you are a... All in all, they could still win the West. That is the kicker, is they can still win the West.
Well, and that's the thing. You look at the West, it's still wide open, to your point, and If you would have asked me before the season why Purdue doesn't win the West, if it plays out that way, like right now, the answer after 3 weeks is discipline. And I wouldn't have guessed that. Like it's, there's just been some undisciplined mistakes in too many different fashions for the Boilermakers, which is, I have to imagine, infuriating as a Purdue fan. You're finally, you might have the most talent in the division and you can't get out of your own way just by playing clean.
I didn't pick them to win the West because I'm a homer. You know, I like, this is like one of those times in my life that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can legitimately pick my team. And it's, nobody should argue with me.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pissing down their legs. I'm sorry for that, but they are. They're just, it's, they get the lead and they go, oh, we won. In a manner of their two games that they've lost, they've left like, I want to say like 2 minutes and like 5 seconds left combined on the clock in those two games. And they've lost them both because they're not disciplined. They won't tackle and then they make stupid mistakes.
Tony, what do you think?
Yeah. And just for everybody that doesn't know, as far as, you know, what Sam's alluding to with Purdue having them beat in literally everything. So just to
give literally
you the passing yardage, Purdue and Aiden O'Connell threw for 424 yards. Schrader for Syracuse threw 181. Like almost, you know, about two times that. Now rushing, that was Syracuse's main goal was rushing, because Syracuse beat Purdue out 125 rushing yards to 61. But the penalties, you know, much like Dalton said, just being undisciplined, Purdue had 13 penalties for 138 yards and held the ball for more than 5 minutes more than what Syracuse did. So believe me, and not to, you know, reference it too much to the NFL, but being a Cowboys fan last year, that's what aggravated me to no end, was just penalties. It was like you see a team that has such great talent like Purdue. You know, Charlie Jones went off again in this game. You know, Aiden O'Connell throwing for, you know, over 400 yards. It's like, okay, this should be a very good and very convincing win. And yeah, it's hard as a fan when you see a team that can't get out of their own way, that has all the potential, all mm-hmm. the talent, and just can't make it click.
I wanted to make a quick correction, or not correction, kind of put a fine point on what I said. I said the Purdue running game did well, and they only got 60 yards, but they were being used effectively, more effectively than they had in the past. They were throwing the ball. That's Purdue. You're going to have games where they just throw 70% of the time, and they're going to run the ball very little, but they were effective when they did choose to run the ball. They were getting 4-6 yards on their chosen run play that's why I heard the stat and I'm like, wow, they only had 60. It's like, but I remember them being effectively used. So yeah, anyway,
well, let's recap a couple others before we take our first timeout here. Yeah. To end the quarter. I want to talk real quick about Iowa and Nevada, because the Hawkeyes put up 27 points in this Ooh. One. They get a win bouncing back, and they started scoring, and the universe said, whoa, this is not okay. And they ended up having a bunch of lightning storms pass by, and they delayed the game 3 separate times. This one took 7 hours from start to finish to be played in Iowa City. And there are pictures of like folks in Iowa City that were just walking on the street as like the delays were like finishing up. Security was gone. So they're like, oh, okay, I'll just go catch a game. Saw somebody was walking their dog and they're just sitting in the bleachers with their dog catching the rest of the Iowa game. Like, it was just phenomenal. But the Hawkeyes get the win 27-0. What do you make of Iowa as we move forward?
That it takes them basically the span of two games, if you look at it from a collective like whole, like each game is about 3 hours each, it takes them two games to score 27 points. And again, I had to ask, I asked it before we started the show, are we sure it's 27 and it's not, they scored 7 plus 2. So, you know, they have to make the score look a little bit better than what it is.
I still think this is a horrible offensive game for Iowa. let me expound upon that.
There was a passing touchdown.
Fantastic. I
haven't seen that in a while.
What, was it more than 10 yards long?
Good question. I'll find that out. Hang on one second. Keep going.
So the reason why I say this is a horrible offensive game for Iowa is Incarnate Word. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure maybe we've heard of them, but not everybody's heard of a school called Incarnate Word. Put 40 on Nevada.
Hey, don't poke the hole in the Iowa ball, okay? Their confidence is sky high.
No. Don't make it be a beach ball. It's a handheld one. It's one of those thing, those cush balls or whatever, the fuzzy, you know, the frilly rubbery like rubber band. That's what you got this week, okay?
Oh. Yep. And to answer your question for Dalton, it was a 21-yard passing touchdown. Okay, so two times what you were expecting over 10.
Yeah.
Well, fantastic. They
showed you, Sam.
I guess. Wow. And their former receiver caught like a 65-yard pass or 55-yard pass to put Purdue up late. Now, granted, we know what happened, but my point is 21 yards. Woo. That was number one for the year, correct?
I believe so. Charlie, that's a great point. Okay, I'm going to look up the longest pass that Iowa's had this season in just a moment. But Charlie Jones in that game had 11 catches, 188 yards, and a receiving touchdown. Now, look, when folks complain about the transfer portal, people should just point to Charlie Jones and be like, see, not such a bad idea.
Correct. Well, here's the thing. I don't think anything that has been put into use by the NCAA here recently, I don't think anything's horrible. It's just horribly administered.
Agreed. Put into
play.
Yeah.
I can appreciate NIL, but don't just make it the Wild Wild West. You know, when you put it into operation, have some sort of setup and plan.
Yeah.
And then we can ingest it, you know, accordingly, not just like get so fat from it and want to throw up.
Bit of an update here going through the Iowa Hawkeyes offense. At some point this season, Spencer Petras connected with, let me see who the wideout was. Oh, Nico Regani, for 46 yards
against Nevada. I just looked at
it. Was it against Nevada?
So it was the same game.
Yes. You're right.
They had their breakout against Nevada.
their longest was Nico Regani. He got 46. Gavin Williams, he got 32.
Oh, wow.
It was crazy. He threw for 175 yards. Big game for Iowa. That's a lot for them.
And my apologies, because I know I butchered Nico's last name, because they just put out a PSA that people have been saying his name wrong for years, but I cannot remember how to say it. So apologies as we move forward. Last game we want to recap real quick before we take our first time out and start looking forward. Oklahoma puts a beat down on the Huskers, 49-14. Nebraska scored first, and I think some people are like, oh, look at the new look Huskers. No more Scott Frost. Look what this is. But that was turned around.
You know, there were people at bars in Lincoln going, "Ah, we get rid of Frost and look what we did." After that first drive.
100%.
You know, there was at least 75 people in bars saying that.
And by the way, all I have to go off of are videos and press clippings, but Mickey Joseph seems like a very likable guy who's really putting a lot into this season in the interim, trying to salvage what there is.
He gets to interview the whole season.
Yep. Hmm?
He should be the lead candidate. Whether he gets it or not, it doesn't matter. He should be the lead candidate right now.
Yeah.
So we'll see. He already fired his defensive coordinator after the game. Like, yeah, he's really applying himself and immersing himself in the program. But Mickey Joseph's first game, Nebraska drops to Oklahoma. I suppose I'll pose the question to both of you, and I'll start with Tony. as we look at the Big Ten West, and again, it's a mess. Is there any belief that Nebraska can salvage the season to still contend for that division? Or maybe you could put another tier or angle. Can Nebraska still salvage the season and get to 6 wins and make a bowl game? Is that a believable mark?
I think so, because I will say, when I watched that first drive of Nebraska versus Oklahoma, I was like, oh, wow. Like, maybe Scott Frost really was what was holding them back, because it was a good first drive. They even got a couple stops against Oklahoma. I was like, oh, my
God. You were in a bar in Lincoln yelling at
me. Tony was the guy.
Back, Big Red, baby. They're back. But, no, it was like, I felt bad for Mickey Joseph, because this is the first game he gets thrown into the fire. You know, the Wolves, they're now ranked number 6 Oklahoma. And it's like, oh, Mickey, here. Oh, man, if you can get the upset, that's going to be fantastic for you. Like, you are going to be on everybody's mind. But I think the season is salvageable. I think now that because you can already kind of see the offense is doing better without Scott Frost being there. You know, much like Dalton said, I think Mickey Joseph is really trying to make sure that this team is at least ran the way it's supposed to. So I think it is salvageable. As far as winning the West, I think that's completely out of the picture at this point. You know, they're 1-3 right now. So it's like that's a hard uphill battle to climb. And the only team left right now in the West that's undefeated is Minnesota. And of course, you would still have to deal with the offensive firepower of Purdue. So it's like just having to contend with that. And even as bad as Iowa is offensively, defensively, they're still the best team in the Big Ten. So it's right. I don't think Nebraska would be able to fare that well as far as even competing for the West. But I do think this season is still salvageable.
Important to point out too, before Sam jumps in, they are 1-3 overall, but just 0-1 in the Big Ten. So right. Like. When you look at the conference, Mark, they're not in a huge hole from that perspective yet. But go on, Sam.
Question. To determine divisional winners, do they take the crossover games into consideration? Because Purdue is technically 0-1 in the conference, but inside division, they haven't played a game.
It starts to make an impact when you start making your way down the tiebreaker.
Okay. So like to win the division, if somebody's got a 1-game lead at the end of the season, they win the division. There's no
correct. There's whoever has the best Big Ten record. That's
inside the division, not yes. overall. Okay.
No. It's overall.
Forgive okay. So, yeah, so if Purdue,
if Purdue finishes games 8-1 and their only loss is to Penn State, they win.
Right, done. but it is 8-1. Like any Big Ten yes. game is taking it. Okay, so Purdue's yes. 0-1, but they're only 0-1. But mm-hmm. like for Nebraska, I don't know. I know you got tickled last week when I was like, you know, they're not going to contend, and you're like, you want to write them off, and I immediately switched my like, I don't know actually, mm-hmm. like
And that's by default. Sorry to interrupt, but just no, because the rest of the West is what it is, correct? Yeah. Like it's not yeah. a confidence in what yes. Nebraska is.
If Minnesota yeah. had you know, more formidable opponents and was this dominant, I would say there is no chance Nebraska could win out, you know, to their West division. There's no way. But nobody has decided that they're going to be that team. They're just kind of, hey, let's be dominant throughout a game and then do stupid stuff at the end. Or let's do it. Just nobody wants to say we'll take first, you know, it just. And so, honestly, I don't think Nebraska will salvage the season to where they're winning the West.
Mm-hmm.
I could see them getting to 6, but I could honestly see them losing out. Like that's, you just don't know which way those kids are going to turn, you know?
Yep. I don't know. It's a fair point. And you bring up Minnesota, that actually leads us to the end of the longest first quarter in Big Ten plus 4 history. We'll start previewing games right after this.
That is
second
accurate.
Quarter. Yeah, it is. We're going to start previewing. So Minnesota gets their first taste of not just Power 5, but Big 10 action and their first road action as well. They're on the road to East Lansing at Spartan Stadium taking on Michigan State. It is a 3:30 kick. Minnesota right now favored by 2 points, I'm seeing as the spread at the time that we're talking about this. Minnesota's numbers are gaudy. Between Mo Ibrahim in the backfield, Trey Potts in the backfield, Tanner Morgan at quarterback, the defense being what it is. But big news, the Gophers lose top wide receiver Chris Ottman-Bell for the rest of the year getting ready for this game. And forgive me, this isn't the first Power 5 game. Minnesota did just beat Colorado. I do need to correct that. But Colorado, this might be their worst season in their school's history. Like, Colorado is really, really bad. Really bad. And then Minnesota's other teams were Western Illinois and a couple others. So nobody really knows what to make of this.
New Mexico State was one I know.
That's the other. Thank you. So as we head into this one, I think odds makers are looking at it like, I don't know what to take from that Michigan State road trip, and I don't know what to make of Minnesota. And so it's just a question mark.
It's essentially because every home team gets 3 automatically. Like, they have 3 points automatically. So for Minnesota to be a 2-point favorite, that tells you that they have no idea, but we think maybe Michigan State's just slightly better. Like, they're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were all the way to number 11. They went to Seattle and got thumped.
Yeah.
Minnesota's great, but they've played nobody. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the conundrum game, because you're like, wow, both teams should be just dominant.
Mm-hmm.
And one is showing that, one isn't, and you're like, I don't know which one. I don't know
what to believe.
I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like this is just one of those, because it's really the first, you know, one of the many first conference games that are big time matchups. Obviously, we started out the year with Nebraska versus Northwestern for the Big Ten West, you know, and, you know, Purdue versus Penn State. Yeah, this is one that is hard to make off of, because if you look at it from just paper on stats, again, they haven't really played anybody, but Minnesota is number 2 in the Big Ten, just behind Ohio State. They average 554 yards a game. They're number 2 in scoring. They drop 49.7 points a game, and they're number 1 in defense. They allow just 170 yards a game total. They allow just over 100 yards passing, and they allow almost 70 yards rushing, and they've allowed they allow about 5.7 points. They're tied with Michigan in that regard and just behind Iowa overall. So on paper, it looks like this is going to be a Minnesota runaway, but of course, you know, Michigan State is, you know, just slightly favored. So yeah, I feel like this is one, it's purely a toss up. You know, Michigan State lost to a Washington team probably nobody really expected, or everybody kind of underslided more than anything. And again, Minnesota hasn't really faced anybody of worthy competition, because the same New Mexico State team that Minnesota thumped on, Wisconsin turned around and thumped on, and they dropped 66 on New Mexico State, and New Mexico State was only able to score a touchdown. So yeah, this one is just literally flip a coin, and that's about your odds right now.
And if we're talking matchups here, Michigan State's front 7 is the linchpin. That's the flex of the MSU defense. Like, the front 7's legit. The secondary is where you really have concerns and makes you kind of start reaching for that panic button if you're going to hit it. But that front 7 against Minnesota's rushing attack, I mean, that's going to be a fun matchup to watch. We'll see how good Minnesota's defense is, because Michigan State is going to need to try and solidify a rushing attack. I mean, what they did in Washington, I think they only ran for 42 yards as a team. That is so rare in the Mel Tucker era. I believe when Michigan State runs for 100 or more yards in a game under Mel Tucker, they're 13-1, if I have that stat right. Wow. If they don't hit 100 yards, I believe they're 2-4 after that loss. Wow. So, like, solidifying a rushing attack and getting that offensive line to create a push would be huge moving forward and into this game. And that would help balance things out, because as we saw, the first 2 weeks, Peyton Thorne didn't look Peyton Thorne's best. But this last week in Washington, I mean, Peyton Thorne was slinging that ball. Like, it was an impressive performance from him and from Keon Coleman. Maybe you end up getting Jaden Reed back. We'll have to wait and see. But I'm curious to see how that all plays out. But Ibrahim and Potts against that front seven of Michigan State, I mean, that's strength on strength.
I'm excited to see it because I've enjoyed watching Mo run when he was healthy in the 14 years that he's played previously. So, but yeah, he's a really, really good running back. And I like seeing, like you mentioned, strength on strength play, because that's when football is the most fun to watch, is my best against your best. Whoever wins, good job to you, sir. You know, that you do nothing but respect it, you know, at the end of the battle. You know, I love that. Mm-hmm. So, I'm excited to see that. If I had to pick something, I'm still going with Michigan State. I really am.
Let me ask why.
I think that necessarily, you know, Miami, geez Louise, who do I think they're playing? Minnesota doesn't necessarily have to, doesn't rely on their passing necessarily to be productive. So I think that front seven's going to at least keep Mo a little bit lower. He's going to have a good game. You can't totally stop him, but you can keep him lower. I mean, it matters, you know, if he gets his, you know, 75 yards, but you hold him to 75, you have a good chance. And because the secondary doesn't have to do as much work, and maybe Minnesota and PJ Fleck, they prepare this week that we're going to throw the ball more this week because of that secondary. But I would still take Michigan State. I don't even need the points. I'll just take them to win.
Okay. Tony?
Yeah, I'm a little bit torn in this one because, I mean, I'm going to pick Michigan State, but, you know, my heart in me wants to pick Minnesota, and because, you know, they're my pick to win the West.
No, your heart wants you to take Michigan State. Your brain
Isn't that Minnesota. Spartan logo on your chest? Yeah, like, come on now. What do you mean your heart?
Literally.
Recovering right there. Yeah, it's... When I was looking at the stats, I was like, okay, you know, what's Michigan State's defense in the Big Ten, and then what's Minnesota's rushing? So Minnesota's almost already rushed for 1,000 yards so far in the season. And then Michigan State is kind of the better end of the rushing defenses. But much like Sam said, you know, Minnesota doesn't rely a whole lot on their passing game, which to me is going to be their potential Achilles heel, because for some of these bigger games and these bigger team matchups, you have to be able to throw the ball when you need to, and you have to be able to put up big plays. You know, it's not necessarily a bad thing to kind of have this old school mentality of, you know, run the football first, control the clock, you know, control the game. And that's the best way to, you know, win the game, is to keep the other team off the field. But yeah, it's one of those, I'm a little torn. I'm still going to go with Michigan State. But yeah, I'm a little bit torn.
Well, and if I take a look at the Shetler Bible for Big Ten football and open this thing up a little bit, besides from what we can go off of for this year, I mean, Michigan State's rush defense last year, even in a year where the pass defense was as bad as it was, ranked fourth in the Big Ten, 15th in the nation. So it brings back a lot of that front seven that was so good throughout last year's body of work, and that you can kind of apply it to this year's. But I also do want to mention, because Tony brings up that Minnesota's his pick for the Big Ten West. Look, if Minnesota's able to get out of Spartan Stadium with a win, things really look good for Minnesota, because after that, they host Purdue. That's one of the contending ones you're going to have to win if you want to win the division. And then you're at Illinois, at Penn State. That one's tough, but that's one of your crossovers. And then you host Rutgers. That's your final game against the East Division, is Rutgers, which should be a winnable game for you. Then at Nebraska, hosting Northwestern, hosting Iowa, at Wisconsin to close out the season. So Minnesota doesn't have it too bad. They don't have Ohio State or Michigan. They do have to go to Happy Valley, but if they can escape with a win here, they're in a really good spot. Michigan State kind of needs this one to bounce back and kind of get back in the groove of things. Let's switch over to another one of the games. Blackout in Columbus. Ohio State will be hosting Wisconsin. And this one, in years past, really grabs the headlines. And like for all the shows, it's kind of the first thing you talk about. You get into this game. This year, the spread's above 17. Not many people are expecting Wisconsin to make, not even win this game, but even to make a game out of this matchup with Ohio State. The Buckeyes are coming off of dumping 77 points on the Toledo Rockets a week ago. Do either of you two believe that Wisconsin makes this a game at all, or Ohio State just runs away with it?
They'll be there.
So yeah, they'll be
that
there.
Will be mean a game will ensue, correct?
Yes, that's true.
Or do you mean a competitive game?
I do mean a competitive game, but I appreciate the minutia.
Yeah. No, I really, honestly, this used to be a pregame warm-up, like, you know, a big matchup before the huge matchups that ensue, you know, like, you know, it used to be, oh, well, you know, watch out for Wisconsin you're talking about Ohio State, watch out for Wisconsin in week four. This week you're like, well, are they going to win by 3 touchdowns or 5? Like, I just don't have that confidence in Wisconsin as much as Tony does making sure they are competitive. They're just not gonna. I do not see it in my scenarios that they keep it close.
So I'm gonna go, and much to my surprise, I'm going to pick Wisconsin to be competitive for at least the first half. Then everything goes south the second half, and Ohio State, you know, roll over Wisconsin. Because I always feel like the first half of a game, it's you kind of figure each other out. You kind of figure out what works. You know, maybe you surprise the other team with something that they probably weren't expecting, you know, from the film room, everything like that. Then the second half is when, okay, now we've made adjustments to those. Now we know what they're going to do. Now we're going to roll, which is exactly what I see Ohio State doing to Wisconsin.
Now, of course, when it comes to Wisconsin, the strength is Braylon Allen, Ches Malusi, the rushing attack in that Badger backfield. At least that was something we were all kind of highly anticipating heading into the season. A lot of questions were kind of around Graham Mertz. Mertz right now, as we sit, has the 5th best quarterback ranking in the country, quarterback rating in the country. And that begs the question, this will probably be the first time we see Ohio State's defense tested, maybe in some fashion when it comes to pass defense. Now, remember, the Buckeyes finished 97th in pass defense a year ago. That got the old defensive coordinator out and brought Jim Knowles in. This might be the first time he's tested. We thought it would be Notre Dame, but as we can tell, Notre Dame it was not a test, because obviously Notre Dame lost to Marshall. Buckner's out for the year, Drew Pine in, but we have seen just incompetence on the offensive side in South Bend. So this might end up being the first time the Buckeyes are tested. Any concerns there, or you just believe that Jim Knowles' new system will pass this tested with flying colors?
Yep.
Good enough.
Yeah.
Fair. It's fair.
I do think that with Knowles in Columbus, it's a different defense. And so while that is a fair question, and
I'm looking for points ask, here.
Yeah. It's a fair question to ask. I just don't think that it's accurate. I think that Knowles has this at least better. It's not going to be worse by any means, and I think it will be markedly better than, what did you say, 97th?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be markedly better. So while I still probably think it's still a concern, because it will be until it's not, you know, I mean, honestly, it hasn't been tested yet, so this will be one step in saying, yep, but secondary's fine now, you know? That's what I'm saying is how, okay, what I take from it.
Yeah. So far, I'm going to say yes, mainly because Ohio State has played Notre Dame. Now, for what it's worth, we all know Notre Dame, for whatever reason, has not been great this year. But looking at it, you know, Ohio State is ranked sixth in the Big Ten against the pass. They're actually tied with Purdue in that mark. They have both allowed exactly 583 yards passing, and they allow 194.3 yards passing a game. Wisconsin is ranked a little bit above them. You know, they allow 170. But again, Wisconsin hasn't really faced anybody of, you know, power merit, at least if we're just going to go purely off of ranking, like Ohio State has, with having to at least face one tough matchup of Notre Dame. As we know, Wisconsin's biggest matchup that they had faced was Washington State, and they lost. Yep. So, yeah, I think Ohio State's defense will answer the call and really make this Wisconsin offense struggle.
Let's go ahead and move to the final preview before we hit halftime in what is the longest recorded first half in Big Ten plus four history. This is the matchup we've been waiting for.
Yes.
The punters from down under. You have two Australian punters in this matchup. On Iowa, you have Torrey Taylor, who's dazzled with his footwork so far this season. On Rutgers' side, you have Adam Corsack, a.k.a. the Aussie Assassin, a.k.a. Punt God. This is a matchup we've been looking forward to for a while. The punting is going to be extraordinary.
This will be a game when the only time the ball is inside the 20, it's going to be because the drive starts inside the 20 and heads that way or gets punted into the inside. I don't think the offenses will produce any because Iowa's defense is stellar.
Mm-hmm.
And Rutgers has a fantastic punter, you know, and Iowa has a horrible offense. So mm-hmm. any sort of defense is going to keep them in check. I mean, no offense to South Dakota State, but South Dakota State. So like it's going to be 3-2. And the coffin corner kick will be the final nail in the coffin for whoever loses. I don't even know who's gonna lose.
Tony,
I'm gonna go with the Scarlet Knights, and the reason why I say that is because of an actual pretty surprising stat that I found. So Iowa ranks dead last in running the ball. They've run for 277 yards in all the games they've played. They average 92 yards a game. Defensively, guess who is number one against the rush in the Big Ten currently? The Rutgers Scarlet Knights. They've only allowed 97 yards. They average about 32.3 yards a game rushing defense wise. So, like you guys said, it's going to be a punt for the ages. Like, if this isn't the NFL where they can extend punter contracts for like 10 years and, you know, like a ridiculous amount of money. But if they could, both of these schools, both their punters get like 6-year, you know, $58 million deals just for the amount of which they've had to punt and how good they've become, because they have not only practice, but then they get to do it on the field. They get to punt so much.
I am so excited for this and what we're getting ready to see. I'm also envious of that stat, Tony. I see you coming for it. That's a good number to drop. I was unaware of that one. Let's go ahead now and hit the halftime break. We'll come back on the other side, and believe it or not, we'll talk a little Big Ten basketball before we get to our headlines.
Whoop, whoop. Whoop, whoop. You are listening to Big Ten Plus Four, hosted on Anchor and StreamYard.
I'm Lauren.
And I'm John.
And we host the Beard Owl Podcast, the podcast where we talk about two of the greatest things in the world, beer and Weird Al.
And a bunch of other stuff.
That's right. Do you like nostalgia? Do you like sibling banter? Do you like beer? Do you like Weird Al? Are you human?
If you answered yes to any of those questions, give us a listen. Become one of our loyal commenters.
Hey, this is Russ.
This is Kyle.
This is Michelle.
From the Infectious Groove Podcast.
Join us every Monday for the most fun you can have with a music podcast. The Infectious Groove Podcast uses a positive and fun approach as we take time every week to share our jammy jams, then dig into a thought-provoking topic discussing all decades and genres of music. You can find the Infectious Groove Podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can head to infectiousgroovepodcast.com to find us there and subscribe. We might have a controversial opinion here or there, but we always have fun with it.
Oh, I'm sure I'll say something dumb.
Subscribe to the Infectious Groove Podcast, part of the Odd Pods Media Network.
All right, time for the third quarter. This one's going to be a little bit quicker than the others as we're starting to press against the clock.
Well, and we don't have a lot to talk about on this topic, but it's enough to fill a small segment to lead us into our final.
Very true. Yeah, there you go. It's a fair point. Actually, apologies to Tony and Sam. I'm not looking at either of you right now because I have the Big Ten men's basketball schedule pulled up in front of me, because before you know it, I mean, it's coming. We're going to be talking about this and tipping it off in about a month and a half. And by the way, we're going to get into women's basketball later on in this show as well. We'll be covering both as we move forward. But as we take a look at maybe some of the bigger games, I'm trying to highlight some of the big ones. Michigan at Michigan State is the first huge game I'm seeing from a neutral fan perspective. That's Saturday, January 7th. Moving down from there, trying to find some more of the Indianas, the Purdue's, the Ohio State's, maybe even Illinois. Give me one more. Indiana at Illinois, Thursday, January 19. That should be a big one in helping determine who ends up winning this championship, because as we enter the season, Indiana, Illinois seem to be two of the favorites. Michigan seems to be in the conversation. Michigan State's in the conversation as well. A lot of people like the core that's back for the Spartans. However, Jaden Akins just underwent foot surgery, and he's out for some weeks. That's a big blow to what might be the start of a sophomore breakout season for Akins. Do we have any thoughts from the initial schedule release, some of these big games as we get ready for the 2022-2023 season?
Go ahead, Tony.
Yeah, I agree, because when I watched Michigan State versus Michigan last year, it was so good. Now, what does kind of make me wonder is how does Michigan's, how does their head coach do? And I am blanking on his name for whatever.
Juwan Howard.
He kind of flirted with the Lakers a little bit during the offseason. He ended up not going with them. He comes back to Michigan. But we noticed he was basically gone at the end of the season because of the, confrontation that he got into with Wisconsin's basketball head coach. So, is he able to keep it together this year? Is he able to keep his cool and be there for the team when they need him? Now, don't get me wrong. They did great in that stretch without Juwan Howard, but can he stay there for an entire season? And can he be the role model that these guys need and, show that, hey, I've made a mistake, but I need to be here for my team? Because this was a team for, up until that happened, it was like, okay, Michigan might be right up there as far as contending for, not only the Big Ten championship, but even contending as far as, going farther into the playoffs. So that is probably going to be the interesting one. And for people that don't know, and Dalton and I may or may not be a little bit biased about this, Michigan State, if they don't do well this year, they're projected to do very well next year, because as it stands right now with the 2023 commitments that they have, they're ranked number 2 in the country. Mm-hmm. as far as the commitments that they have. So Coach Izzo, he may not get it this year, but next year, to quote Mel Tucker, we coming.
I love that. It is a dynamic class. If you don't pay much attention to recruiting rankings, that is something to pay attention to. Michigan State's group coming in that next year is something special. Sam, what sticks out to you?
Well, on that same January 7th, you were talking about Michigan and Michigan State play, yep. Wisconsin and Illinois play. After last year, don't ever discount Wisconsin. Coach Guard's got them in the mentality of we're never out. you know, kind of thing mentality. So I wouldn't sleep on that at this point. Now that may be a dumpster fire by the time we get to it, you know, one way or another, but I kind of always see that as, you know, if Wisconsin's playing a contender and they're not considered a contender, you at least, you know, make some note of that. So like that would be the first one that kind of jumped out at me. And then I always like looking at the end of the season.
Yep. Because, that's where I was going next too.
So one that jumps out on for me is Sunday, March 5th, Illinois at Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
That could mean something, even if Purdue's not considered, you know, in contention. We kind of all suspect that Illinois will be. It's always hard to go to Mackey, and it may be one of those times that Purdue's playing to secure a bid to where it becomes a dangerous game to go into.
And on the same token, that same day, Michigan is at Bloomington, Indiana. Yes,
yeah.
That could be big as well. And the day before, Ohio State's at Michigan State. We'll see if that maybe has any play in it. But I want to ask you, too, because do we agree that the two biggest rivalries in Big Ten basketball is Indiana-Purdue and Michigan-Michigan State, right?
Yeah, no argument.
Yeah.
Okay. I know Illinois seems to like try and become a rival with a bunch of different schools in the last couple of years. Like it feels like they want to be rivals with somebody, but it just hasn't quite clicked on. But these
reminds
two rivalries,
me of Night at the Roxbury. You want to ask me?
No. You're right. Like it's kind of what it feels like.
Okay.
But those two rivalries, I think it would be amazing if the Big Ten basketball season ended every year with those two playing each other at one of the locations, and they vice versa, they flip because they play each other twice each season. But I think you're going to see instances where one of those four teams is championship contending, and that game will either be the rival can either spoil a potential championship bid, or you can beat a rival to get a championship bid. Like there are so many interesting human pieces, storylines to that deal. I go back to 2019 when Michigan State and Michigan played the final game of the regular season at the Breslin Center. Both teams were 15-4. Purdue finished earlier today, earlier that day with a win against Northwestern to be 16-4. So those two met at the Breslin Center, and the winner was going to tie for a Big Ten championship, and the loser wasn't going to get a piece. And the atmosphere that was there is among the best I've ever been a part of to witness. Like, it was off the charts. Students were lined up 20 hours in advance to get into a basketball game. Like, you could create things like that just by simply having rivals play each other at the end of the season.
I don't hate that. Football does it.
Yeah.
You know, they play your biggest rival is your last game of the season. You have other rivalries, you know, Purdue plays Illinois for a cannon and, you know, Notre Dame for a shillelagh or whatever in the world that is. But they play for the bucket the last game of the year every year. So why not? Why not do that with basketball? You know, make sure that, you know, Michigan and Ohio State's not the same in basketball as it is football. It's Michigan, Michigan State in basketball. And that's fine. I love that idea.
Tony?
Yeah, I agree. I always love it. And to be honest with you, I always felt that college basketball, the atmosphere that you get with college basketball, to me, with the exception of a handful of games in football, you know, Michigan versus Ohio State, even with Michigan versus Michigan State, the atmosphere just contained in this little tiny building, you know, with college basketball, all these fans, you can literally feel the electricity. To me, it's just incredible at the matchups and the rivalries that can come about with this. So I think it's great. I love it. I honestly feel like college basketball never gets enough love for what it is. I kind of feel like that with a lot of college sports, to be honest with you. I'm like, I don't feel like they get enough love.
That a boy.
Well, in the worst case scenario, Dalton, is you get an end of the season rivalry game. I mean, that's the worst case scenario. And I love days that Purdue and IU play.
Even if they're both mediocre and like they have nothing else to play for, you have your rival to play against. Yeah. And that brings something at the end. Like, I think this is such a home run that's sitting there That
scheduling
could be
it shouldn't
on.
Be difficult. Like you can literally tie that in and say, this is the schedule for the last game for each of these teams, you know, be it Friday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. It doesn't matter. Those are the last games. Usually that's when you play your rival.
Yeah. So yeah. We're all in agreement. Okay.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Kumbaya again.
No better way beside by the bonfire to head to the fourth quarter. Time for the headlines. If you're new to the program, this is where each of us goes off and gives something that stood out to us throughout the week. So the Tony Tribune, what is the headline?
So you gents probably know this, but the people that don't, there are seven Big Ten teams that sit right now are undefeated on the season. There's seven. Only one of them from the West so far, that being Minnesota. But the other ones, to I think a lot of people's surprise, Indiana, Maryland, and Rutgers are all undefeated.
Every East team besides Michigan State now.
Yeah, every East team. And, you know, Ohio State's undefeated, Penn State, Michigan, we kind of may or may not have expected about 90% of those. But the fact that Indiana, Maryland, and Rutgers have all been undefeated now, again, they haven't really faced anybody that's like, whoa, this is a big win. But the overall fact that they're undefeated, even the quote-unquote bottom of the Big Ten, at least the Big Ten East, is showing that they're still competitive. Of course, I talked about a lot of the stats for all the teams, but Maryland is actually ranked number 3 in offense in the Big Ten currently. So this is going to be a really good matchup with Michigan versus Maryland. I'm kind of excited for that game. I'm hoping it's better than what it is. I know we've talked about, you know, Maryland being a lot better than what people may or may not give them credit for at least on paper, what talent that they have. But yeah, I'm a little bit proud of the quote unquote bottom of the Big Ten in football, at least that they're up and coming. They're 3-0 right now, which is a lot. Not many teams can say that.
And think about if Rutgers does beat Iowa this week, I mean, that's like the 5th best team in the Big Ten knocking off the defending Big Ten West champion. And like, yeah. Or maybe it's the 6th best Big Ten East team, either 5th or 6th. I'd probably say 6th, but you're talking about maybe them knocking off the defending West champion. That's very possible. But you know what, you two, because you talk about Maryland, I think what's really interesting, the following week, Michigan State heads to College Park to take on Maryland. We've talked about the past defensive issues from Michigan State going against a couple of NFL receivers and Talia Tagovailoa. That's going to be one to watch as we flip into October.
Could be some fireworks from the Terps.
It's true.
Could be.
Very well could be.
Could be, Dalton.
But we'll be talking about that more next week. So thank you, Tony, for the Tony Tribune. Sam with the Sam Sentinel. What do we have?
Heading to the ACC and Big 12 today.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you heard, but we're playing basketball in September. Because when you go to Lawrence, Kansas, you've got Kansas Jayhawks and the Duke Blue Devils playing this week, and they're both undefeated. Tony talked a little bit about the Big Ten East and the teams there being undefeated and kind of not used to seeing that. This is something you don't normally see when it comes from these two blue blood basketball teams. They come into a matchup, you know, great, the connection is there, it's two blue blood schools from basketball, they're playing football. Well, now they're both undefeated, so there's actually more to this valued game right now than what was originally signed up for. This is fun. I don't have a rooting interest. I really don't care as to who wins. My point is it's always fun to kind of see those two or programs that are normally great in one and then transfer into the other sport. And so it's really cool to be able to see Kansas and Duke, two schools that normally play basketball at a very high level, at least in the preseason, working their basketball magic on the gridiron. So fun thing there. not anything of great importance, but it's just fun to watch and fun to see happen occasionally. So that is the fun side of the Sam Sentinel this week.
I love that. And you have Kansas undefeated, you have Duke undefeated, Indiana's undefeated. Like, there's a bunch North of Carolina, basketball powerhouses.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. This is a
Kentucky's season ranked in the top 10.
Right.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. Take that, Coach Cal. Yeah.
The rivalry of Stoops and Cal continues. But no, it's a fun bit. It's a fun bit for the season.
Yeah, because you know what? It probably will these teams be anything by the probably not. They're gonna lose games that they shouldn't, you know, whatever. But my point on this is at this time in history, it's a fun thing to see play out. And they've scheduled this a long time ago, but it just works out nicely right that they're both undefeated.
Yeah, that is something. As we switch over to the Dalton Daily, I want to get this in front of me. Tony, I mentioned just a little bit ago that some of the college sports maybe don't get the love that they should. Well, we kind of want to spread some of that to a sport that certainly deserves some notice and a headline here. 2 weeks ago in Nebraska beat Creighton 3-2 in volleyball. But what's really stand out about it is that the attendance for that game was 15,797 people in Nebraska taking in the volleyball game. That was an NCAA regular season attendance record that was set with that game. And that's pretty impressive, right? And it's a great Big Ten number. It's phenomenal. It's great support. Just a little bit later than that, Wisconsin would host Florida, and they decided to move this game to the Kohl Center to see if they couldn't break that attendance record, and they did. 16,833 people watched Wisconsin and Florida volleyball, and of course, Wisconsin and defending national champs. But how incredible is the support that exists with Big Ten volleyball? I mean, that is simply staggering. 16,833 people watching that volleyball game.
It is such an amazing it's awesome that they were able to get the word out and get, you know, bigger campuses. Obviously, it's a little easier to at least get some larger crowds when it's, you know, hey, we're going to fill the Kohl Center or whatever. But it's awesome that people are willing and wanting to go watch this. You know, this is great volleyball. And the Big Ten has been year in and year out, you know, fantastic in volleyball.
The best in the absolutely country.
So you've got, I mean, Penn State's always really good. Purdue's always really good. Wisconsin, Nebraska, Minnesota, I think's competed at a very, very high level. You know, and you never discount Ohio State. You know, I mean, these are great programs that are playing great volleyball as well.
But how about that? 16,833.
I saw
people.
That and I'm like, oh, wow. And I saw the Wisconsin announcement. Well, then they referenced the one from Nebraska. So I looked into it a little bit too. And I was like, wow, that's an incredible number.
So that is an NCAA regular season record set by Wisconsin volleyball. And the kicker is they lost the game in 5 sets. Florida came in front of this sold out crowd and ended up winning the game, which is just too bad. But still, the support that exists for Big Ten volleyball, amazing.
But what's Florida thinking when they walk into that? You know what I mean? Like, oh my goodness.
Well, that's we're talking about, like, some of the great atmospheres that exist in college sports. Those volleyball student athletes got to experience what the height of college basketball, the height of these college football atmospheres, they got to experience that. And that's really cool.
That
really, really
in
cool.
And of itself is a lifetime memory for those 100%. Ladies. Yeah. It's wow. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you remember that night we went into the Kohl Center and they had 16,000 plus there and we beat them.
It's so cool. I mean, it's so cool. It really is. Okay, so that's that for the Dalton Daily. Before we get out of here, we'll toss the baton back to Sam so you can let you know where to find us all over.
Yeah, it's not completely updated with the icons, but up at the top of the screen if you're watching. But for those listening, it's at Big Ten Plus 4. Spell out the plus, Dalton. Don't put the plus sign, but it's for Twitter. It's for Instagram. It's for TikTok. All three of those is at Big Ten Plus 4.
Just, is that how you do the... I don't know. Isn't that the whoa? Isn't that what the kids do?
Yeah, it's a flow. Okay, yeah. I'm getting it here.
Oh, you brought up TikTok, and I just was like trying to think of something.
Yeah. I don't do the TikToks, so
I'm hip. I'm with it.
I'm not. But you just search Big Ten Plus 4 on Facebook, or you can go to oddpodsmedia.com, find us or any of the Odd Pods Media family of shows there. We stream every Friday morning at 8:45 in the AM Eastern on ASAP Network on their live TV channel, as well as their Facebook page. We're having a great time, and we just nailed her down.
All right. So for a couple of us old guys and the third old guy, Tony Hollinsworth.
He got booted, really. I guess.
Today, yeah. Tough producer, Sam. Kicking him out of here.
I didn't do anything. I promise.
Oh, shoot. For Tony Hollinsworth, Sam Sprunger, I'm Dalton Shetler. Thank you all for tuning in so much this week. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Big Ten Plus 4. Take care.
See ya.